Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for joining us. 800-531-3815. Toll free coast to coast. 800-531-3815. My website is www.jbsba.com. Rich Gannon is our guest. Rich is a political hack by his own admission. He's of the Republican persuasion. He's the publisher, the author, the writer, the editor, and everything else.
Sales manager.
Sales manager, exactly. And chief janitor of the outstanding cyber column, Mullings.com. He's also a part-time pet psychic. Rich, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, my friend. Happy New Year.
Yeah, good. Happy New Year to you. Let's have a good one. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's going to be fine. I really do. I feel as good about this year as I did probably, you know, in 2001 until we get to September.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, that the signs are generally looking good. I mean, everybody's in pretty good humor here in Washington. Yesterday was opening day. It's just like opening day at, you know, at a baseball park.
Opening season, I think. Yeah. If you watch some of the things, it was more opening season. Okay, now the main reason that I wanted you on the show today, Rich, was to cover the president's speech. Now on Friday, our resident CPA is going to join us to talk to us about how the actual technical impact of the president's proposals are going to have on us from a tax standpoint, mm-hmm. but I want you to talk to us about the politics of yesterday.
Well, the politics are, this is something we learned when I was working for Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton was president, and the politics are this, that there will be four, you know, 300 and something different Democratic versions of what ought to happen. There will be one Republican version of what ought to happen. And that one Republican version will come out of the White House, which was the same thing that happened in reverse when I worked for Newt. Although Newt was a very powerful voice for the Congress, it is just a whisper in the wind when it comes to the White House, when the White House decides on a policy matter that it wants to focus its attention in one direction.
They close ranks, don't they?
Oh, man, I'll tell you. And because we have the House and the Senate, the rules are so different, and we won't go into them now because nobody understands them all. I mean, a lot of people understand the Senate rules.
Don't reach for the buttons, folks. He's not going to do that.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I mean, a lot of people understand the Senate rules. A lot of people understand the House rules. Nobody understands
both. You scared me. They were reaching, and I thought we were going to lose them, Rich.
Exactly. But the reality is that if you have a one-vote majority in the House, that's enough because you control the Rules Committee, and the Rules Committee decides under what circumstances a bill will come to the floor, and that's that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always beat them. In the Senate, because you've got the, you know, the filibuster rules and all the other stuff, it's a little more complicated, a lot more complicated, in fact. But earlier this morning, in preparation for chatting with you, I talked to the new Bill Frist's new chief of staff for the in the leader's office, a guy named Mitch Bainwall. We had a long chat about this, and he said it's going to be difficult but not impossible, largely because, and this is the political part, because so many Democrats are running for president,
mm-hmm.
that it's going to be difficult. They won't vote for the Republican bill particularly, but it'll be very difficult for them, he thinks, in these early days at least, to coalesce around one Democratic message because they want to differentiate themselves from each other. As he said, the first Democratic primaries are being conducted in the well of the Senate.
If this weren't the opening day, so to speak, of the 2004 presidential election cycle, they would be more coalescing around the Senate leadership or the Democrat Senate leadership.
Right.
And here's Daschle's, they would be singing Daschle's tune more.
Right.
They?
And here's as an example, most of what happens in the Senate is done by agreement or by, they take votes, but a lot of it's done by unanimous consent. And there was an agreement on both sides for the unemployment insurance extension to be 13 weeks. They brought it to the floor, thought it was going to be a quick voice vote. They didn't even think they're going to have to take a recorded vote on it. And lo and behold, who's the first person to pop up and break the agreement is Senator Hillary Clinton,
mm-hmm.
who wanted to be the first one to make her mark, you know, as a leading voice for the left. And so she busted the agreement. And then, of course, people scrambled to either get in behind her or or knock it down. And in the end, of course, it was knocked down. But but that's the kind of thing that we're going to watch. And so now the Democrats are going to have to, you know, kind of keep one eye over, even if they make a deal, they have to keep one eye over, open at Hillary, who, you know, may decide sometime later this year that she is, in fact, the best man for the job.
Even though she continues to deny that she's going to do anything.
You know, sometimes the voters just drag you in kicking and screaming.
Yeah, yeah. I heard a guy on Crossfire last night who would, I've forgotten his name, but he had been a congressman before, and he said he got out of politics because of illness. Mm-hmm. His constituents got sick of him. So this, you're talking about the reverse of that with Hillary, I think.
Exactly right. Well, she'll read the tea leaves any way she wants.
Stand by. Okay. 20 till. We're going to be right back with our good friend Rich Galen. More to come. Stay with us. Back at 17 till. Let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, Jeffrey Zabar will join us and talk to us about home-based business issues. Also, we'll do some little telecommuting in there, too. Alan Friedman will talk to us about technology, and Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, will help us review the most recent Kiplinger letter. Rich Galen is our guest, and folks, I want you to get your pencil and touch it to tongue and get it ready to put to paper, or address the keys, because I want you to write down or type in this address, Mullings.com, MULLINGS.com. That's the website where you will go and find the website of Rich Galen. It's where you will be able to go and subscribe to his free newsletter, which comes three times a week, which I don't care whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, or a mugwump, you need to check out his newsletter. You need to have it sent to you by email three times a week, because
you
will like it. Even if you don't like politics, you'll enjoy the fun that Rich has with it.
Yeah, thank you. That's very kind of you, Jim. On the website today, there's a link to the White House fact sheet, so that if folks want to get a fairly decent and quick, easy-to-read summary of what's in this program, they can go to Mullings and follow the links.
I appreciate you making that available. In fact, I didn't know it was there. I'll actually go there myself.
Yeah, it's very helpful. Yeah.
But let's get back into the politics. And by the way, folks, something under a million people are already subscribing to Rich's newsletter, so his column, so check that out.
Significantly under a million.
Unlike me, it's his, unlike my articles, which, you know, sometimes I go on a bit. His is pretty short. So anyway, let's talk about the politics of what the president did yesterday. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
I guess I'm answering my own question here. I guess the timing of yesterday's speech was so that it would be day one of the new Congress. But this what he said yesterday sounded like some awfully good fodder for a State of the Union speech.
Well, that'll come up in about 3.5 weeks. So yes, I think that's right. I wrote this in a column the other day that when you look at the fact that the president is preparing for a potential shooting war in Iraq, is dealing with a huge diplomatic problem in North Korea on the other end of that continent, has now proposed a major economic incentive and is preparing to propose a major overhaul to Medicare. If this had been a Republican administration, the press corps would be a Democratic administration, the press corps would be falling all over itself to proclaim the brilliance of the management of all this. They'd just be beside themselves about how smart this guy was and what a great team he had. But I think what you do in these cases is the president, I believe, wanted to get out of the blocks very quickly on domestic policy issues. The war on terrorism, the problems with Iraq and North Korea, everybody's aware of, and those are long-term issues that are not going to go away between now and 2004. The domestic issues can be dealt with in this kind of a way. And because everybody was back in Washington, the focus was back on Washington, the members were all in the same place at the same time, this was exactly the right time to go ahead and strike that match. I mean, it's the equivalent of trying to light a fire with one twig, or go ahead and you know, gather a whole bunch of kindling and put it together. It's a lot easier to start a fire if you got a lot of kindling, and all the kindling was in town yesterday.
You know, Rich, I I made notes on the details of the president's speech, and I have to say, I don't think there's anything in here that you or I couldn't have predicted.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, there wasn't anything that really just took my breath away. Really. So, but because what we need to have happen is not rocket science. It's not like we had to come up. And I think that's one of the things that the American people have got to. I think they're actually becoming more in tune with this. And that's the fact that there aren't any silver bullets. We've just got to tighten up our belts. We've got to make sure the government doesn't overspend or overtax.
Right.
And we got to let people go back to work. There's nothing magic about it. But here's the thing. The thing that I liked more about his speech than the details of his proposal was what he said beforehand. Do you remember what he said?
No.
He talked about how important it is for the government to realize that the government's got to get out of the way. I'm paraphrasing him now. The government's got to get out of the way. The government doesn't create productive jobs. The government creates jobs that aren't productive typically. The government doesn't need to be in the marketplace deciding what the marketplace is doing. The government needs to be helping the marketplace. And that's in essence what he said for about the first 8 minutes or so.
Which is to me, that's
the kind of language. I was prouder of him for that than I was for the details of his proposal.
Yeah, if you look at I think it was the Atlanta Journal-Constitution editorial this morning, they, you know, immediately shifted back to the kind of 60s liberal line that if you take all the money that the president is, quote, spending, unquote, by reducing taxes, you could pay for all these other programs. Well, the answer is we don't want the government paying for all these other programs. We want people to have the money. I mean, that one issue about increasing the child care credit is going to help small business people because the folks that work for them that have kids that have to be cared for during the day, after school or whatever it is, that means that the amount of money that they get back from their taxes is money that the individual business owner doesn't have to spend to support somebody else's government program.
So this
has some real implications. I was looking at a chart in USA Today this morning that's put out by the Brookings Institution, which is kind of a liberal group here in Washington. And I don't think they meant it to come out this way because I think they wanted it to show how unfair it was, because it shows that if you make more than $1 million, you save $88,000 and the other guy only saves $515. But the fact is that anybody who earns $30,000 or more as a family income does better. $30,000 and up does better under the Bush plan.
Mm-hmm. Stand by, Rich. Okay. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after these messages. It's 10 till. Rich Galen is our guest. Mullings.com. Check it out today. We're back at 7 till. Rich Galen is our guest. Mullings.com is his website. That's also his cyber column that I recommend to you. Check it out when you get a chance. You'll enjoy it, I promise you. And he's like me. If you get it, you decide you don't like it. He's like just like my newsletter. If you want to be off the list, he'll take you off, no problem.
Yeah.
And also, I'll also remind you, he's also like me, has a very strict privacy policy. You give him your website, I mean your email address, it stays with him.
Exactly.
No questions asked. Okay, Rich, quickly, I want to ask you one more question about the politics of what the president did, then I want to get into some geopolitics.
Mm-hmm.
First, tell us all what you said, a little bit about what you said this morning in your column about the likelihood of the president getting what he wanted.
Well, the first thing is that the unemployment insurance business will be taken care of, I said this morning, in a matter of days and perhaps in a matter of hours.
That's bipartisan expediency.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that could easily be signed, what's today, Wednesday, by tomorrow, by midday tomorrow. And I think it probably will be, because that should have been done before they left in December, but they just didn't do it. So then in the House, because, again, as I said, because the rules favor the Republicans, he'll probably get about 90% of what he wants in this thing, and they'll tinker with it because everybody, you know, wants to say that I got this in or I took that out. But 90% of this is a lot. And in the Senate, he'll probably get, you know, about 75% of what he wants after a lot of gnashing of teeth and carrying on and posturing and playing around with it. But in the end, they'll get about 75%. And then the House and Senate get together and kind of split the difference, which will be, by any measure, a victory for President Bush, because he will get a huge proportion of what he wants.
And when will that happen?
I would say it'll probably happen by March or April.
Okay.
It depends on whether or not there's a shooting war, Frank.
And it'll still be retroactive? You think
Oh, yeah, oh, absolutely. This Treasury Department's working out the tables as we speak to publish the new tax tables to make everything retroactive to 1 January.
Okay, let's move over into geopolitics.
Okay.
And I predicted, my big prediction this year was that we would not fight a war with Iraq this year. Now, I didn't say that we wouldn't use our troops. I didn't say we wouldn't go in over there. I didn't say we wouldn't occupy. And I'm not saying no shot will be fired. But in terms of a war with Iraq to get Saddam Hussein out of there, I'm predicting that that won't happen and the whole thing will be resolved by April 1st.
Well, you know, from your lips to God's ears, as my mom used to say, there is a... I read that when you sent the column. Was it last Sunday? This past Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
The two things that are going on are, A, you have to assume, I don't know this, but you have to assume that the CIA and the special ops guys are working very closely or trying to contact the generals, Saddam's generals, and say, look, you've got two futures, one of which allows you to continue living. Now,
right.
It's up to
we're
you.
We're not going to blame you.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's right.
You can roll over.
Yeah, whatever, you know, you can help, remake Iraq if you want, or we'll get rid of you, but those are your two futures. The other thing that's going on, and it hasn't gotten a lot of attention here, but it's gotten some attention in the papers overseas that I check with some regularity, and that is that the leaders of the nations surrounding Iraq are working very hard to try to come up with some formulation that will allow him to allow Saddam to leave Iraq.
One-way ticket.
One-way ticket out. But it'll be a very expensive ticket. But they got a lot of money, so that's up to them.
Mm-hmm.
That serves their purposes because they don't want to deal with street demonstrations, what have you, with their own fundamentalists if we go in and take this guy out.
Saddam Hussein is a madman, but he's not stupid.
He
knows that the powers are aligned against him. He can't beat the U.S., let alone the U.N., and he knows that he'll live 36 hours after the invasion, maybe.
Yeah, that's right. But you don't want to. If you don't have to deal with that aftermath, it's better.
Exactly.
You don't want to send our kids in if we don't have to.
And that's the reason why I'm predicting that we'll have to do. We'll have to be prepared to do what we say we're going to do. But I don't think there'll be a war.
Well, here's what happened. You don't do that. You don't get to that point, Jim, by sitting back in Washington and wringing your hands and trying to find somebody else to talk to. What you do is you send the troops over, you send the planes over, you get Britain to send five more ships into the Persian Gulf.
Right.
You start activating the reserve troops and start sending them over.
And you furrow your brow when you talk about them. I mean, you let them know as the President of the United States that you're not going to mess around with this.
That's exactly right. And you can't. I mean, it's like every film noir movie or every Western for that matter, where if you let the bad guys run free, then they will run free. If you don't, then you gotta stand up at some point.
Every once in a while, you gotta punch the bully in the nose.
Yeah, and it's sometimes it's an ugly scene, and sometimes there's, in the old Western sets, the shop fronts the window got broken. But at the end of the day, the sheriff walked down the street and all was well.
Rich, well done.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for being here. Let's have a good 2003 together.
Together.
Rich Galen, ladies and gentlemen. Mullings.com. Check it out. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, each and every one of you. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.